Dan Matthews is in the studio with us this afternoon. Dan is one of the leaders of PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. What is your official title there? Rabble Rouser?
I always just say one of the Hellraisers.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not much of a title person. It's technically Senior Vice President.
Yeah, but you really are the Hellraiser, the Rabble Rouser, the guy who says, you know, let's take over whatever somebody else is doing and try to make our point.
Yeah, you know, we're a pressure group, and so being annoying is our currency. We exist to bring unwanted attention to some of these companies who have cruel practices. And that's how we get what we want, because these companies normally don't do things out of the goodness of their heart. We've been able to convince McDonald's and Burger King to stop buying meat from slaughterhouses that fail inspection. We've convinced designers like Ralph Lauren and Tommy Hilfiger to stop using fur. We've pressured Revlon, Avon, Gillette to stop testing their products on animals. General Motors even to stop doing crash tests on animals. So we have a good track record. I've been there 22 years, and I've written a book about some of the crazy things a pressure group has got to do to keep these issues on the front burner.
Yeah, Dan's book is called Committed, a Rabble Rouser's Memoir. And we'll talk about some of the things that you mentioned and some other related topics. But I would be remiss in my job if I did not start talking to you about the news of the day involving Michael Vick.
Absolutely.
Who, today has accepted a judge has accepted his guilty plea to this federal dogfighting charge. And come December 10th, he'll get sentenced and probably get 12 to 18 months, although the judge says, you know, by accepting this guilty charge, you're leaving it up to me. I could give you the maximum, which is 5 years in jail. I'm guessing there were PETA people outside the courthouse cheering today.
Yeah, well, we've been following the case since even before it broke in the national press. We actually are based in Norfolk, Virginia, about 30 minutes from Michael Vick's house where the dogs were all found. And we got whistleblower calls on this months before it ever broke in the national press. Mm. People who knew things were going on there. And the local law enforcement dragged their feet. They wouldn't execute a search warrant. So months before it was known in the national press, it was a local story that we were pressuring law enforcement to act upon. And they finally did. And then, of course, all the evidence surfaced. And now the day has come in court. And we actually sent Michael Vick a letter a few weeks back saying, there are two things that we really would love to hear. One is that there is some remorse, and that dogfighting is scurrilous, and that you deplore it, and you've had a change of heart. And the second is that kids should not follow your lead. This is not something that kids should get into. And we're relieved that today he actually said both of those things. He didn't show a lot of empathy for the animals, but hopefully that will come with time.
Yep. Here's what he said. He said, I apologize for all the things that I've done that I've allowed to happen. I'm sorry to all the young kids out there for my immature acts. What I did was very immature, so that means I need to grow up. I'm disappointed in myself. Dogfighting is a terrible thing, and I reject it. So maybe that was your influence, or maybe this was some PR spin person who got to him and said, you know what, these would be really good things if you ever intend to make a living ever again.
Right,
you better
right.
say these things now. And by the way, the judge needs to hear them too.
Exactly. Well, it's encouraging, and hopefully they're just the first of many steps. We've actually asked him if he would consider appearing in public service announcements so that we could deflect all the attention from this particular case with him onto all the other dogfighting cases across the country. There are people now coming out of the woodwork talking about situations in their own community. I mean, obviously, that happened in the news this weekend about DMX being involved in dogfighting rings out in Arizona. And so that's what we're trying to do. We have public service announcements that we've been pushing out all over the country, urging people to speak up about such cruelty in their own areas and to get more involved in this. And so we think that this is going to be, hopefully, the first step of many steps that will wipe out this underground pseudo-sport dogfighting.
Talking with Dan Matthews from PETA here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. PETA has been also pushing the NFL, in light of the Michael Vick thing, to add cruelty to animals in all its forms to the NFL's personal conduct policy. What does that mean, cruelty to animals in all its forms? Does that mean no more hamburgers at the Dome?
That would be exciting. Actually, we just awarded...
Good luck with that one.
We actually just awarded a stadium here with being one of the veggie-friendly ballparks. So there's, that's another issue. There was a case that you may remember from the news in February in which another Atlanta Falcon was in trouble for killing his girlfriend's dog to get back at her. And so there have been a number of cases, other cases involving alleged dogfighting, that have come up time and time again. And it just seems that among a lot of pro ball players, there's a lot of disregard and even wanton cruelty with animals. And so we've urged them to have it as part of their training, sensitivity training, for a lot of these people to realize that this is just unacceptable behavior, just as they would learn to cope with the problems such as drugs and other things that a lot of athletes have faced when they find themselves having millions of dollars overnight. And I think becoming more responsible people and not being so cruel to animals.
But doesn't the NFL already take that tack towards people who treat animals cruelty? Because when I hear that phrase, cruelty to animals in all its forms, I wonder how you're going to get that into a league where the ball is called the pigskin and it's made of leather.
I wish other people would be as insightful.
I mean, you're
as
not
you going to.
You're not going to get the NFL to go plastic.
Yeah, no, actually, that's a separate campaign.
Or this is pleather. Just excuse me.
Well, actually, the NBA actually did replace basketballs with non-leather materials,
and the players hate it.
Yeah, it didn't last very long. They got rid of it in about a month.
And was that at your urging?
We did urge them to do that, but it's also, I mean,
but they went back. The important thing to mention.
Well, they went
there.
Back, but at least they considered the situation. I mean, for God's sakes, it's a game. Do we have to skin an animal for it? I think that where we live in modern times, that it's just like, you know, thinking that you have to wear fur to show that you have money or look glamorous. These are just little things that we try to evolve with as a society, move away from, and leave in the past. You know, there's just a lot of cruelty that's unnecessary.
Is it driving you crazy that I'm wearing a leather belt?
Nah. Not at all.
No?
Really? Now,
I can't see
that?
Your belt.
Okay.
We would think that
that's
would
because
drive
I've had
you.
Too many steaks and cheeseburgers and my belly's hanging over it.
Yeah. No, leather's the last to go. Believe me, I was not raised by hippies. My dad drove a chicken truck. I was such a meat enthusiast as a kid that I ripped into New York steaks. I looked for a Noah's Ark platter on the menu, hoping that I could eat two of each species. I was not raised to become this. I just learned a little bit as I grew older, learned a little more, evolved myself, and decided, you know, I can have a great life have a great living without killing. And I volunteered as a kid, and I started working at PETA when I was 20, and now I'm 42.
You were the receptionist at the beginning,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And now you're the guy who causes trouble. Or one of many. That's a pretty big group.
I was in a lot of trouble before I started there.
So. Oh, is that right?
And I wanted to ask you, too, could one eat an animal that isn't treated cruelly, or is the fact that we kill an animal, period?
You know, for me, it's very simple. I would never the only reason I would ever kill an animal was in self-defense. And there are certainly more gentle ways of doing things. For instance, one of our biggest campaigns is pressuring KFC to stop live scalding birds in defeathering tanks. They use such outdated methods, and chickens are not covered by the Humane Slaughter Act, that they get away with hideous, hideous cruelties. And we've pressured them for years to do this. We got Reverend Al Sharpton to back our boycott and to narrate our KFC video. Urging
that helped or didn't help. You realize that.
Well, yeah. It helped an awful lot of attracting wider spread attention to it. Mm-hmm. And I think that we actually drafted Reverend Al Sharpton because he's not a vegetarian, but he's against corporate cruelty, against factory farm cruelties. And I think most people out there, when they hear about some of the things that are going on, I mean, these crude gathering methods whereby birds have their wings and legs snapped in two when they're crammed into crates. You know, our KFC campaign is not about trying to get them to use the Colonel's secret recipe only on tofu. It's about just stopping some of the cruelest practices. I mean, it'd be great if next week it was a vegan world, but that's not going to happen. So we just try to isolate some of the worst cruelties, get them out of the way, and then, at the same time, urge people to rethink their diets in general.
See, I got to be honest with you. I'm one of those people who you can't reach with that message because I don't care. Because I hear those stories and I go, they're going to kill the chicken and serve it to me on a bun.
Well,
that's fine.
Why,
as long as it's tasty, that's all I care about.
That's why most of our campaigns are geared toward kids. You have got some decades under your belt of consumer habits.
Yes.
You've got diets you don't want to change. Most of what PETA does is geared toward younger people who are starting to form their lifetime habits. Animal rights is very much more a consumer issue than a political issue. It's about things we eat and things we wear. So a lot of our activities are geared toward kids. We get people like Pink to host our videos, or Pamela Anderson to host our videos.
That's not about Bill Maher.
Wait a minute, hold on. 16 to 25-year-old men, yes.
We try to
13 to 25.
There you go.
Well,
there
okay,
you go.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. 12, maybe.
You know, we have all these videos on PETATV.com that are hosted by different personalities to try to reach people who might otherwise not care but are interested in these personalities and are also, kids have a much more open mind about things. They have a great sense of justice, which has not been corrupted like yours has been, Paul. So.
Mine was only corrupted by, tasty. These guys will tell you, that's pretty much the defining philosophy in my life.
There's some great
tasty
things to eat that have a great flesh-ripping sensation that don't bleed.
Now, don't
There's
try
some
to
great
fool
flesh-ripping sensation.
Just last week we were talking about what a con it is to tell people about a product called Tofurky. Don't tell me it's turkey made out of tofu. If it's not turkey, don't call it turkey.
I love it, and there's no bones about it.
Oh, man.
He's ready.
I'm Paul Harris, sitting in a studio here with Dan Matthews, who's one of the leaders of PETA. His book is called Committed, a Rabble Rouser's Memoir. He'll be signing copies of the book at Left Bank Books at 7 o'clock tonight. Would it be appropriate for people who are pro-meat to show up and protest you tonight?
Sure. Come one, come all. Even throw tomatoes if you want, but please throw cherry tomatoes only, the small kind.
Do you catch them in your mouth?
Oh, yeah.
Where was it that somebody threw bologna at you?
Yeah, actually, the opening chapter of the book is called Meet Me in St. Louis. Only meat is spelled M-E-A-T because I actually, some years ago, dressed up as a carrot to promote vegetarianism outside of elementary schools in the Midwest and in cattle country. And in Iowa, some pig farmers showed up and gave the kids luncheon meat to throw at me. And they were tossing bologna and pimento loaf. And it kind of brought me back a bit because I used to get beat up in school for being gay. So I thought, now I've been attacked at school for being both a fruit and a vegetable.
Ah, very nice. Very nice.
He's a stand-up.
You know what? I will say this. Bologna would have been okay, but throwing pimento loaf or olive loaf.
That's cruel.
That is cruel and unusual punishment.
Pimento
for
loaf is not natural. It's not natural.
No, they fake the pimentos in there.
Pretty much anything loaf is unnatural.
I just want to go back to the Michael Vick thing for one moment here, because I said that he'll probably get 12 to 18 months, but could get as much as 5 years. What do you and the PETA members think would be an appropriate punishment for him?
Well, I mean, it's all based on his demeanor. His demeanor has been really decent so far for his two appearances in court. I think if he shows responsibility, if he decides that this is an issue that has raised national concern and that he's in a very unique position to, you know, a lot of people will get assigned a, you know, community service. And yeah. I think his community service should be helping law enforcement focus more attention and helping different communities across the country expose dogfighting rings. So I think if that comes into play, that would be a lot more productive than him just sitting in jail and being bitter. And we're not out for vengeance. We're out for the most realistic solution to dealing with the overall problem nationwide. So it's hard to say right now. But, you know, now that he's made this stance today, it makes things a little bit easier to look at. And it'll be interesting to see what happens on December 10th.
In one of those stories that I read today about him pleading guilty and the judge accepting that plea, not only were there PETA protesters out there, it also says Vic was met by cheering supporters as he was escorted into the courthouse. And all I could think is, you know, I disagree with a lot of what PETA stands for, and I think some of your tactics have been over the top. But I do agree with you about, you know, what Michael Vick has done. It's horrible, and he should be punished for it. I can't help but wonder, who are these idiots who were in front of the courthouse supporting him? Cheer, yay, go Michael Vick!
Well, I think that some people just get so captivated by a place where there are celebrities and cameras. I mean, for God's sakes, Paris Hilton had a contingent outside of her jail cell at midnight. So I think
Michael Jackson had the same thing.
That's exactly right.
So with Vic, a lot of people think that he's just being brought down intentionally because he's who he is, even though that's not really true. Well, people see it that way.
And we talked last week, the NAACP was there saying that, you know, you're targeting Michael Vick. And, you know,
well, they did say he should be punished.
They're making it a racial thing.
And I think that's what's important with why he was his plea of guilty is what I think erased the racial lines. I think
hopefully,
if he had pled not guilty, then I think people would have lined up and said, oh, they're doing to him what they did to, you know, OJ and all that. And it could have become a totally different story.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that he's showed responsibility is pushing us on a more productive track.
You mentioned Paris Hilton. Who spent more time in jail, you or her?
Oh, definitely me.
How many days? Do you know?
I don't know. I stopped counting at 20 different arrests.
Because she was at 23 days.
Yeah. Oh, collectively, I've done more than that.
Okay.
And in several countries. I actually, before writing this book, what led to the book actually was I wrote a connoisseur's guide to the world's jails for Details Magazine, where I rated each jail on food, hospitality, accommodation.
Wow.
Yeah, there's
How does a vegetarian fare
in Hong Kong, they brought a special vegetarian food in jail.
Tofish.
Don't get arrested in Chicago. That's awful. They don't, you know, they throw you basically a bologna sandwich and a donut that says fried in real lard. But, you know, even when, when you're a vegetarian in jail and you can't eat anything, you can trade for pillows, things like that. So it works out one way or the other.
What would you expect in the home of the nation's stockyards? Come on, Dan. Let's go to the phones here. Dave, you're on KMOX. Say hi to Dan Matthews from PETA.
Hey, good afternoon. Dan, kudos to anybody who gets a book published.
Hey, thanks.
Hey, two questions. Number one, what is PETA's stance on sport fishing, okay? Because I find it real hard to believe that I shouldn't be fishing.
Well,
catch and release only. And then my second question is, doesn't the whole PETA philosophy fly in the face of, like, human nature in terms of animalistic nature? And those are my two questions.
Okay.
Great. Thanks. Well, to answer the first question, yes, we are against fishing. That's how I actually personally got involved in this. I used to go fishing with my dad every weekend. And I started thinking, wait a second, I've got my finger on this line here. I feel this creature starting to struggle. They really start to struggle. They start to run. And that's when I get off That's how I have fun, is by having, you know, this other creature at my mercy. And I started thinking at age 12 or 13, this is kind of sick. I mean, it's beautiful out here on the ocean. The water's great. But is this the only way I can enjoy it, is by causing suffering to some other creature? And I started having doubts about it then. And that's what started me becoming vegetarian and all that, was because that was the only kind of animals I ever really killed. So, yes, we urge people to enjoy nature and let wildlife be wild, and not, especially, you know, fish have such a great, it's one of the only parts of the world that is as uncorrupted, the undersea world. I mean, there's horrible drift nets and things like that, but I think it is a shame. I think that there's lots of other ways to enjoy nature. So I know that's not a popular opinion, but it's one that we hold. And catch and release, it's still just beating somebody up for fun and tossing it back in the water. And it just seems, you know, it seems wrong. It seems basically wrong.
Do you think people should own pets?
If you're responsible, yeah. It's like, should you have kids? Not if you can't support your kids, and not if you haven't accepted a lifetime responsibility.
Okay, what about teaching the dog to do tricks or fetch? They don't naturally do that.
Actually, well, they do.
Dogs are very...
Dogs in the wild are not chasing Frisbees, Kevin.
They're not
no,
in the
but
wild.
They'll chase other things.
Domesticated dogs love interaction, so things like that I think are great. You should spend as much time with your dogs as you can. A lot of people crate them up and put them in the laundry room when they get home from work, like to take them out for 10 minutes, and that's wrong.
With Paul calling it a pet?
I actually call them companion animals.
I know.
I don't quibble. I know. Yeah. It's nauseating. I agree. I didn't change. I didn't correct him when he said pet. Yeah. I let you say it.
But do you think that instead of being a pet owner, you're a pet guardian?
Well, see, I don't get involved in all the semantics. I think that a lot of that is crap, frankly. But I think it does drive home the point that when you call it a pet, it just means it's at your whim for your, you know, at your, when you are amused by it.
Not so, if you have a cat, you know that.
See, now I love cats. Cats are very much about, you know, drop dead. I mean, having my own fun over here, and I think that's kind of cool. But
Dan Matthews' book is called "Committed: A Rabble Rouser's Memoir," and let today be the day that you remember when you say, "Paul never has guests on a show who he completely disagrees with." Dan Matthews, ladies and gentlemen, on KMOX. Tammy, you're on KMOX. Hi, Tammy.
I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
I wanted to say that I am an animal rights person. I've started a local spay-neuter group. I do fostering and rescuing for different animal rescue groups. But I have to say that even PETA is too over the top for me at times. I enjoy fishing. I do catch and release. And to me, just the fanaticism of the group tends to turn a lot of people off. I think they would get a lot more supporters. I think people would open their ears more if they weren't so fanatical.
What do you say to complaints
well,
like
first
that?
First off, it sounds like it's terrific, all the sheltering work you're doing, all the rescue work you're doing with animals. And we're glad that people are doing something, even if they're not all the way there yet. But we don't exist to attract members, and we don't exist to attract public support. We exist to be a pain in the butt to the companies that are doing cruel things. And the only way we're able to get them to change is by going over the top. And I don't blame people such as yourself for rolling their eyes at some of our strategies, but we would never have been able to convince all these companies to stop testing if we were nice. We wouldn't have been able to convince McDonald's and Burger King and all these people to make these sweeping slaughterhouse reforms if they weren't afraid of us. And so I'm afraid that's the price we pay. And we never actually set out to even be a large organization. We just set out to be the cutting edge organization. And it's we're always amazed. We have 1.6 million members now. People join up despite some of our activities.
I'm glad you called, Tammy. Thank you.
Thanks, Tammy.
Dan, I've got to ask you about a website called PETAKillsAnimals.com. I'm sure you're familiar with it. This is a group that took out a full-page ad. The Center for Consumer Freedom, which is funded, by the way, by the food industry, they ran a full-page ad in the New York Times, and they say that PETA is being hypocritical in its complaints about Michael Vick, who killed 8 animals, when PETA has killed, by their count, 14,400 animals since 1998. The ad says, PETA has shamelessly used the horrific Michael Vick case to pad their group's coffers, even though their track record of slaughtering thousands of helpless, adoptable animals is far more damning. Americans need to be aware of how PETA treats animals in their care and reject the group's overt hypocrisy. That's a quote from David Martosko, who's the CCF Director of Research. How do you reply?
Yes, well, actually, this is a group, of course, that's funded by a lot of our adversaries. And I think the point that they point out, which is we're happy to have the opportunity to address, is PETA does euthanize animals. We work with shelters across the country to upgrade their systems so that they euthanize animals humanely. Sadly, there are millions and millions and millions of unwanted dogs and cats who are not adoptable, who people don't spay and neuter their animals, and they have litters, and these animals end up in the streets or in shelters. And there's a lot of shelters who use really old-fashioned methods. They use gas boxes, which don't kill the animals thoroughly. Animals are just partially gassed. Some animals are just shot with guns. Some animals are left to rot in barren cement stalls. So we actually do work with humane societies all over the country to urge them to humanely euthanize. We are in Virginia. We're in southeastern Virginia, which is a very, very poor area near North Carolina, the very poor part of northern North Carolina. And we've actually had to work with shelters there to get them to take some of their animals that they're letting languish, and we euthanize. We actually are licensed by the state of Virginia to euthanize animals. And our adversaries, such as the people who are involved in animal experiments and the meat trade, which is what this group is based from, and they try to drive a wedge in the public by saying, hey, look, they're killing animals. And we've never kept it a secret. It's been in our annual review every year. They're just trying to drive an emotional wedge with people who can't discern the difference between sharpening down a dog's teeth to training them to fight versus humanely euthanizing animals, and training personnel in underfunded shelters.
When you say they're using an emotional wedge, what you mean is they're using your tactic. It's against you.
Not so much our tactic.
Isn't that what you do a lot of the time? The same sort of thing. PETA does exactly this. You put out shocking stuff to get people's attention.
Yeah, I guess in a sense you're right. Sure.
And sometimes you want them to go, hey, what's the story behind that?
Yeah, that's fair enough. I won't quibble with that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you've explained your side of it. So there we go. Talking with Dan Matthews, activist for PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. His book is called Committed, a Rabble Rouser's Memoir. He's been very successful at getting celebrities like Chrissy Hynde of The Pretenders and Pamela Anderson and Paul McCartney, whose wife, late wife Linda, was a major activist as well. Paul McCartney has fired people from his road crew who ate meat. Now, how does that work in a world where we're supposed to be free to make our own choices? How about if that went the other way?
Well, it's when it's on his dime. He doesn't want to have any of his tour expenditures go to buying meat, so he.
He fired a guy for bringing a hamburger in from a Hardee's and eating it backstage.
Well, I don't know about that in particular. That may have just been some rumor thing that happened. I just know that he has a very tight ship and has a veggie tour. And why shouldn't you, if you're the boss and it's your money, I think you should be able to call the shots, and we applaud him for it.
How would you feel as are you vegetarian or vegan?
Vegan.
Okay,
yes.
How would you feel as a vegan if you're working for somebody and they're ordering stuff and all the food that's there is unacceptable for you to eat?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm in a lot of situations. Probably only half my friends are vegetarian. But, I kind of roll with it. I don't take it personally, and I don't, get all up in arms about it. I mean, I still go to steakhouses and just have a baked potato and A1 sauce. And some
so the
salad.
Vegan doesn't eat dairy, is that right?
Yeah.
So what's wrong with milking a cow?
Most people are appalled by the veal trade, the idea of taking a male calf and isolating them in a crate for their whole lives and, keeping their flesh unexercised so that it's more tender when people eat it. Mm-hmm. That is directly related to the dairy trade. They basically, the female calves are recycled into the dairy trade, and if they're male calves, they're put into the veal crates. So there's that. Second off, we're the only species that drinks the milk of another species. And we're the only species that drinks milk after infancy. And it's just not healthy for us. It's one of the reasons, one of the big problems with obesity. It's one of the big problems with, a lot of health problems that are related also with heart
Dan,
disease.
Dan, I
got to
tell you,
like
you are making me want veal parmesan more than ever before.
and
that would be the two things combined.
Problem
and
with cake.
A lot of people are lactose intolerant, yet they have these milk ads shoved down their throat. And these are real health problems that affect millions of people.
All right, I got to run here. Dan will be at Left Bank Books at 7 o'clock tonight. The book is called Committed, a Rabble Rouser's Memoir. Dan Matthews from PETA, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
This is KMOX.